Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals this morning. We're glad you're here. Before we begin, I want to introduce the panel to you. To my left is Justice Mike Wallach, and to my right is Justice Dana Womack, and I'm Bonnie Sutter, the Chief Justice of the Court. I understand both sides are ready. Before we begin, I'll ask the clerk to call the case, please.
The court will now call Columbia Medical Center of Arlington versus Jared Bush, Jr. May it please the court, Ms. Michelle Robertson to argue for the appellant, Mr. Matthew Keeter to argue for the appellant.
Ms. Robertson.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. I'm here representing the appellants. That's MCA and HCA. And we're here to ask the court to reverse the trial court's ruling that the appellee's second expert report sufficiently cured some deficiencies that this court identified in the first appeal involving the first report. And it's our position that despite having a virtual roadmap from the court's opinion, and being given the opportunity to cure, that Dr. Patterson did not do enough to cure these formerly conclusory opinions and make them into adequate opinions. So I was just going to jump right in and start on standard of care and breach. He's identified two theories against the hospital. One is the failing to have or enforce certain kinds of protocols or policies and procedures to ensure a cardiac patient like Mrs. Butch gets properly evaluated, tested, diagnosed, and treated. And then a second one, that the hospital improperly allowed Mrs. Butch to be discharged prematurely. So those are the standards of care that we're looking at. In the first opinion, the deficiencies that the court identified were based on the fact that these same two breach theories all implicated the practice of medicine, and a hospital can't practice medicine. And what the issue was is the way the report was written, the expert was saying that the hospital had a duty to have policies that required tests to be ordered or diagnoses to be made or pulmonary embolism to be ruled out. And those were all physician functions under Texas law based on statutes and case law that we've cited and the court cited in its opinion. So what the court said, it was conclusory, and Dr. Patterson needed to identify who at the hospital could have overridden or second-guessed the medical decisions of the treating physicians and explain how anybody from the hospital could do that without engaging in the unlawful corporate practice of medicine. And that was at page star 9 of the court's opinion. So we went back and compared the second report with the Court of Appeals opinion and the first report, and it's our position that they did not do what the court said that they needed to do to get a sufficient report. So I was going to start with the second one first, the premature discharge opinion, because I feel like that one's easily dispatched, and the reason is Dr. Patterson didn't change anything about that opinion in the second report. It's the same exact opinion that was in there the first time around that the court held was deficient. And all he asserts is that the hospital should have had policies and procedures regarding discharge of patients with cardiac conditions to make sure they get diagnosed, and that the hospital breached that standard by allowing Mrs. Bush to be discharged with an unexplained etiology and not requiring close follow-up. That's all he said. So in the first opinion, the court quoted extensively from the Columbia versus Amaripa case from the Texas Supreme Court, and there was a similarly worded opinion that the Texas Supreme Court held was deficient, because the opinion said the hospital was negligent for allowing a patient to be discharged and transferred, but it didn't explain how the hospital was involved in that decision or explain what role the hospital had in making that decision, because it was made by the doctor. And so they said that was deficient. You have to explain those two things. And that's exactly what the second report opinion is from Dr. Patterson here, that the hospital improperly allowed the discharge to happen. So we think that because he didn't fix it, didn't add any facts, didn't add any explanations addressing any of those issues, that opinion is still conclusory. So then that leaves us with the other one, which is based on hospital policies and procedures. The issue that, so in the trial court, I was going to, just so the court knows, in the trial court, the appellee's counsel told the judge that the new stuff that was added is only in one paragraph on page 6 of the report, And it appears at page 141 of the clerk's record. And it's this big, long paragraph here. It starts out, hospitals that treat acute cardiovascular patients are required to have systems-based policies, protocols, and procedures to ensure patients are treated and managed appropriately. So that's the new paragraph. All the other paragraphs, by comparison, are the same. He didn't add anything to those paragraphs. And so he goes on to explain what it means to have system-based medicine. He says, that means you have all these groups of people that work in a hospital, emergency departments, laboratories, pharmacists, physicians. And so the systems-based policy coordinates physicians, nurses, and medical staff so that they all work together and also so that they have appropriate communication. That's the purpose of the policies. But when you dig into the rest of it, where he's, you know, explaining what the policy is, the only specific content of this policy that we should have had that he gives is this. Based on the clinical presentation of Mrs. Bush, appropriate hospital policies, procedures, or protocols would have required specific steps be undertaken, such as order sets for imaging and lab work to ensure that pulmonary embolism was ruled out as a cause of her symptoms. That's on that page 141. So to me, what really jumps out, that's the only explanation or description of how the policy works, but he doesn't state who does the ordering. He doesn't say a nurse can order these tests under this policy. And this is, I think, a problem because 2 pages earlier in the report, Dr. Patterson states multiple times that based on Mrs. Bush's clinical presentation, it was the cardiologist who had a duty of care to recognize the symptoms and take steps to rule it out with a blood test or an imaging study. So he needs to explain why, if it was something a doctor had a standard of care to do, a nurse can do it without engaging in the practice of medicine. That was the whole focus of the first opinion in the first appeal, or the opinion in the first appeal. So he didn't add the explanation of, or any facts explaining how a nurse or other hospital staff member can override the doctor's decision on these things. And that's what's still missing in this report. And then another thing that is not included in the report that really I think is needed to get there and show how it's not the practice of medicine is how does this policy get activated? He doesn't explain how this policy really works. I mean, it does a, if a doctor should have recognized the symptoms and taken steps, how does the nurse know to activate the protocol? Or does the protocol get activated automatically if the patient comes in with symptoms A, B, and C? He doesn't talk about any of that in there. So he doesn't show how a nurse can take these steps within the scope of her license and not practice medicine improperly or illegally. I want to say it would have been so simple for Patterson to state in here, this is what a typical triple rule out policy says, and just quote it. Or this is how a triple rule out policy usually works, and then explain it. But that one sentence I read you is the only thing he says. And he doesn't say, to me, the critical thing that would have probably obviated this appeal, he never says nurses can make orders for labs and imaging under a triple rule out policy without practicing medicine. If he'd said that, that probably would have cured it. Even the plaintiff's
Why would that not be a legal conclusion as to what constitutes the practice of medicine?
Well, I mean, the court, I don't think he has to render a legal conclusion, but I think what the court explained in the first opinion was that the kinds of actions that he is attributing to the hospital are things that only physicians can do. So he had to explain that if it was the physician's duty, which is what he said it was, he needed to explain how a nurse could do it without going outside the scope of her license. Because nurses obviously can't make diagnoses, order tests, order treatments. So that's why I think he could have done it without having to make a legal conclusion, just based on what the court said in its original opinion. Okay. In the trial court, the plaintiff's counsel tried to explain it to the judge at the hearing, and I think he says what probably should have been in there, but it's not. And he says, when you have a systems-based protocol, They don't have to be initiated by physicians. That's what Dr. Patterson is talking about. They can be initiated by a triage nurse at a hospital. A patient comes in with a certain presentation. They can hit a stroke code button on the wall. Orders, lab work, imaging, orders are placed by a nurse. That's what this policy means. But the problem is Dr. Patterson never said it within the four corners. And so the judge couldn't rely on what the attorney was arguing. She had to focus on what is actually included in the report. And that's why we think that the opinion remains conclusory, because it just doesn't have any explanation that cures the deficiencies identified by the court. So we think that both of the breach opinions are still conclusory. And I'll spend my last bit of time on proximate cause. Those opinions are also still conclusory, at least in our estimation, for two reasons. And one is that the main opinions that are on the last page of the report at page CR-143, those are exactly the same as they were in the original report. He didn't add or change anything, even though the court gave him some feedback, him and the plaintiffs, the appellees, in the opinion. And what the court said was he needed to explain how and why the hospital policies and protocols could have changed what the physician did in ordering tests, making his diagnosis, and discharging Mrs. Bush when she was in a stable cardiac condition. And what the reason this is relevant is because, like I said, he is stating in the earlier pages of the report that the cardiologist had all these duties and standards of care and breached them by not ordering the test, by diagnosing a cardiac condition instead of a pulmonary embolism, and those kinds of things. Well, those are things that only the doctor can do. And so if he didn't add that explanation to explain how the nurse could do it under a policy without engaging in the practice of medicine or exceeding the scope of her license, then I think it still doesn't show any basis which the hospital can be held liable under any kind of causation theory. Because the hospital can't be held liable for not doing something that the physician was supposed to do and didn't do. That's just the law of Texas, and that was explained, I think, pretty well. So we believe the second report also didn't cure the deficiencies in the proximate cause opinions. I know the plaintiffs have argued that they added some sentences in that long new paragraph on page 141, but I think the problem is there's a disconnect. If you don't have a valid standard of care and breach under which the hospital could be held liable, then there's nothing to that causally link it to, because what the new opinion states is that because the hospital violated the standard of care, the proper workup was never completed, and pulmonary embolism was never ruled out or treated prior to discharge. Well, again, those are things that the doctor should have done. He should have done a proper workup. He should have ordered the test. He should have ruled out PE, or he should have treated it before he let her be discharged. So if that's what the doctor can be held liable for, I think he had to explain how could the hospital, through policies and procedures, be liable for those same things. And that's what's not in the new report. So anyway, we would ask the court to please find these opinions remain conclusory and reverse the trial court's order and grant a dismissal. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Keita.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice, Your Honors, may it please the court. Your Honors, I respectfully submit that this case is not really about silly Dr. Patterson and why couldn't he follow the court's order and just, we have to dismiss this because it's just a clerical error that he should have caught, but whoops. Case must be dismissed. That's not the case here. What this is an attempt to essentially or tacitly eliminate direct liability to the hospital as an institution by suggesting and relying on precedent that I believe is misguided from a San Antonio Court of Appeals that overreached in their analysis, to suggest that anything the hospital do that factors into something related to medical is practicing medicine. There must have been at least three times that Ms. Roberson said, nurses can't order tests. Says who? You won't find a single case in Texas law that says nurses can't order tests. Nurses can't order imaging studies. They do it all the time. But what they have said is they've used this definition from a San Antonio.
What authority do you have that says that they can?
That's what Dr. Ru- that's what.
No, I'm talking about legal authority. What legal authority do you have, either statutory, case law, regulatory, whatever, okay, that says nurses can order diagnostic testing?
What we have, and I've worked backwards here because it's sort of complicated.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. Practicing medicine is defined in the Occupations Code. Diagnosis, treatment, or to offer to treat a physical disease or disorder by a licensed physician or surgeon. Those tasks are incorporated into the definition of medical care in Chapter 74. Medical care can only be provided by a physician. But we know that the legislature, when enacting Chapter 74, was not trying to conclude or eliminate institutional liability, because health care is defined as what everything else is being done in the hospital, other than treating patients, other than what is defined under the Occupations Code that can only be done by physicians. So health care means any act or treatment performed or furnished, or that should have been performed or furnished, by any health care provider, which is defined as a nurse or non-physician or institution, for, to, or on behalf of a patient during the patient's medical care, treatment, or confinement. It doesn't say and order tests. It says any act or treatment. So if it is not diagnosing, okay, or performing surgery, essentially, which is something only doctors can do, everything else falls into something that is done by non-physicians.
What test is included in the expert's report that is not a diagnostic test?
He specifically says that he should have ordered imaging studies.
It's a diagnostic test. What else?
The diagnostic test is not making the diagnosis. The physician makes the diagnosis with the tests.
Okay. So do you have a statute, an administrative regulation, or a case that says nurses can order diagnostic tests?
I don't have one, but I think I just explained why they certainly can. They're providing health care. And just be very, very clear. If the hospital is eliminated from this suit and the case proceeds against Dr. Sohail, you can bet with 100% certainty that he will point the finger at the hospital as a responsible third party and say, the reason I didn't provide the proper treatment or make the right diagnosis is because the hospital didn't give me the data. And that doctor will have had the benefit of discovery to see how the hospital systems work, to see who is in charge of what, to see what they do on a regular basis, and to discover why it wasn't done. And then when they go to have the charge conference, I'll say, they were negligent because all of these things could have happened and didn't happen, and I didn't have the right data. But he had the benefit of discovery, and he had the benefit of answering all the questions that Mrs. Roberson posed. That's not the standard for a Chapter 74 report.
So if in our last opinion, this court held that what the expert was talking about was medical diagnostics, and that had to be done by a medical doctor because that's the practice of medicine, how has, in this case, how has the expert cured that problem?
I believe, Your Honor, twofold. First answer is that I believe in his lengthy explanation, which Ms. Roberson correctly said was on page 6 of his report, and for whatever reason, contained it in the extraordinarily long, small print, hard to read paragraph. Obviously didn't have the advantage of going to law school where we write with absolute clarity all the time. I broke down every one of his new statements on between pages 2 and 6 of the Appellee's brief here, identifying all the new things that they could have done. The most important one Ms. Roberson hit on, should have ordered these tests. And they note that that protocols, like, you know, the triple rule out protocols that are performed, which is not practicing medicine, these things should be done to provide this information. And I think, you know, I don't have the report directly in front of me, but as you noted, Justice Wallach, does the doctor say they can do this legally without practicing medicine? Well, if he had said that, they would have said that's a conclusory legal opinion that's outside the scope of his profession. So we can't win here. He's essentially saying this is what hospitals do. If it's a small hospital, maybe it's done by a doctor. Maybe the person who is checking people into the emergency room is not a triage nurse. It's actually a physician because he was on call that day. Maybe it's a janitor. Maybe it's whatever. It doesn't make a difference. What has to happen is a hospital has to have a set of procedures so that when somebody comes in, exhibiting the type of symptoms that Mrs. Bush did, they know where to send them. You know, in this particular case, okay, you have, you know, symptom A, B, C, you need these tests, so when the doctor eventually gets to see you, they know what's going on, so that the doctor isn't starting from absolute King's X, wondering what's wrong with this person. And not only is that consistent with the law, that's consistent with common sense. You wouldn't, A, want all of your doctors seeing everybody in the hospital. You'd never get to see a doctor if that was the case. And you also don't want doctors treating people where there's no one that have not had any diagnostic tests to at least give them a lot of things can go wrong with the human body, to not focus on what specifically is wrong. And that's what the tests are for. So essentially, the appellee's entire argument here is nurses can't order tests. Or nobody, but make it broader, nobody that is not a physician can order a test. There's no legal support for that, and all legal support suggests otherwise. We know if the legislature uses a term like any or all, any act or treatment, okay, it means any act or treatment. It could have made a list of what is a treatment or what is not a treatment or what must be done by physicians, and it did do that. Ordering a test is not one of them. So if a non-physician can order a test, and the expert's report says institutions that are practicing medicine non-negligently requires people who come in to go through a certain battery of tests when they exhibit certain symptoms, that's enough to get you there. There's a direct causal link, and there should be, all the authorities are spelled out in the brief. Once we get by that hurdle, the non-physicians can order tests, the rest of the argument falls apart. All of the details, specifically, you know, who should do this, how should they do it, when should it be done. I'm taking notes earlier, didn't state that a nurse can order the test or how the policy should be advanced. That's irrelevant. That's specific to this hospital. We find that out in discovery, and the two sides have experts whose reports, after reading the discovery and, you know, the deposition transcripts itself, et cetera, can form an opinion as to whether it breached the standard of care. Here, Dr. Patterson's job was essentially to say, this is what hospitals usually do, this wasn't done, and a proximate cause of Mrs. Bush's death was the failure of the hospital to give the doctor the information that he needed to make a proper diagnosis. Now, Mrs. Roberson is correct. Part of Dr. Patterson's report did talk about things the doctor did wrong. Okay? But of course we're allowed to have alternative theories of liability. Just like I said, you can be 100% certain the doctor will point his finger at the hospital when we get to the charge conference and when we get to trial. Okay? We can say the doctor was negligent for not doing this himself, and we can say the hospital was negligent for not giving the doctor the information so that he didn't have to do it himself. And either one could have been a proximate cause of Mrs. Bush being discharged with the acute problem that ultimately caused her death going undiagnosed. I'll focus primarily on the opinions related to lack of testing, because I think, first of all, that's the strongest one. It's, I think, clearly acknowledged in the statute. And second, it's well established, and we only need one viable theory to go forward. I don't think this case is analogous to Zamarripa at all, but again, I don't want to spend too much time distinguishing the cases. I've done that in my brief, and I don't want to just read that back to you. This is the second part of my answer, Justice Wallach. He said, how did Dr. Patterson comply with our directive? And this is the answer you don't want to hear, and I don't want to give, but I think if it requires this court sitting en banc to look at the previous opinion and consider, did we incorrectly follow the case in San Antonio?
Are you familiar with the law of the case?
I am familiar with the law of the case.
So your opportunity to address that issue was the last time around, not this time around, wasn't it?
That's correct, Your Honor. Unless, of course, the law is what the law is. We can't waive de novo review. You know, this is their motion. They presented their grounds for it. And, you know, if this court suddenly discovers that in a previous opinion it got the law wrong, it can certainly correct itself. Now, I don't think that's necessary because I think Dr. Patterson's report did what you told him to. If this court is concerned that Dr. Patterson did not, what Dr. Patterson is saying essentially requires non-physicians to practice medicine, I think that is wrong. Non-physicians do all of the things that Dr. Patterson said all of the time. They're allowed to by the statute. And any suggestion that somehow, I want to use the language from the San Antonio Courts case, somehow suggesting that anything related to medical treatment is somehow practicing medicine would essentially blow would essentially eviscerate institutional liability against the hospital, because of course hospitals can't practice medicine. So if the legislature is going to allow a cause of action against the physician and a cause of action against the institution, there has to be something that a hospital does that's not practice medicine. I think the legislature made that clear, and I think Dr. Patterson made that clear. Hospitals have protocols in place that allow doctors to properly treat their patients. And if they don't do that, they're negligent. Again, all Dr. Patterson was required to do was essentially give this court, the trial court, I should say, a roadmap of a viable theory of liability that could be pursued. It's to eliminate frivolous claims. Unless this court is absolutely convinced that non-physicians can't do these things, it must be performed by a doctor, Dr. Patterson's report is plainly sufficient. And if this court is convinced that case law suggests that Dr. Patterson, the law of the case or that the San Antonio Court of Appeals was right, I think whether it's en banc or this panel, I'm not entirely certain of the pursuit, that needs to be readdressed. Because an opinion from this court that says that doctors have to do everything in a hospital will fundamentally change the way medicine is performed in Texas. Okay? Because if everything that is done that is in any way related to anything medical constitutes unauthorized practice of medicine, but if somebody does not have an MD after their name, there's a lot of people in Texas that are in a lot of trouble right now. So that cannot be the law, and I respectfully submit that it's not the law. I don't want to, again, just read back portions of my brief to you. You have my arguments. If you have any additional questions, I'd be happy to entertain them. Otherwise, I'll rest on my brief.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nurse.
Ms. Robertson?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of points. I think Mr. Akita's kind of overstating our position. I don't think the only thing we're saying is that nurses can't order tests. I think the problem with the report is, as I mentioned, is that Dr. Patterson says it's the doctor's standard of care. He even said that he should have ordered a D-dimer blood work test, and he breached the standard of care by not ordering that, and then he breached the standard of care by not ordering the CT, and that was his obligation. So if it's the doctor's obligation by the expert's own statement, then I think he needs to explain how the nurse can do the same thing without practicing medicine or being a doctor. And I'm not saying that they don't do it all the time. They may do it all the time. That is what the plaintiff's attorney told the trial judge. They do it all the time, Your Honor. But the problem is Dr. Patterson didn't say it, that they do it all the time. He hasn't adequately explained how a nurse can order a test under a hospital policy or procedure. And the fact that everybody might know that in their head doesn't give us notice of what conduct they're saying that we breached. So he has to go further and say, especially on the part where he says order sets for imaging and lab work should have been done. When he's talking about these systems-based policies, he says three groups of people work on those: physicians, nurses, and medical staff. So if you have to have order sets for imaging, he should have said which one of those people or those groups should have ordered it. And he doesn't. Like I said, I think if he would have said a nurse can order a test under a hospital cardiac triple rollout policy or a standing order, then that would have fixed it. We probably wouldn't even be here. We're not trying to get the court to hold that everything in a hospital has to be performed by a physician. And I don't believe the law supports that. And the same, I think that's in response to the argument about the court too broadly construed the practice of medicine in the first opinion. The court cited in its opinion four cases and at least two different statutes where it got that information. It didn't just rely on Spinks, which is the San Antonio case that he's talking about. And it didn't just rely on Reed. It actually relied on Zamarripa, Doctors Hospital versus Andrad, section 151.002 of the Occupations Code, section 155.01 of the Occupations Code, and another case talking about informed consent, which, doesn't have any bearing here, but I think the court was just pointing out that If it's a doctor duty, then the hospital can't be liable for the doctor not doing it. And I think that's the problem we have here. So we would, you know, we're asking the court to, and we're not, I don't think he had to give a ton of detail, but I do think he had to say that the nurses can order these tests under a hospital protocol, and the, because he had previously said it's the doctor's obligation. So I know I keep repeating that, but I mean, I think that's kind of the crux of the argument. As Judge Wallach pointed out, the plaintiffs haven't asked the court for en banc review in this appeal. I guess that might come after the court issues an opinion if counsel's unhappy with it. But I think it should have happened the first time around first, which I think is one thing Judge Wallach pointed out. But I don't think we're asking this court to revamp the law. We're just asking the court to look at this second report and compare it to the first report and tell us whether the court thinks that Dr. Patterson added enough facts or explanations to cure the deficiencies that the court said were in the first report. And the court said it was conclusory, so he needed to add these certain facts or explanations, and we don't think he really lived up to that standard. So we would ask the court to reverse the trial court's order finding the second report sufficient and grant our clients a dismissal with prejudice. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counselors. Your argument was helpful to us. We appreciate your being here today. Your case has now been submitted. You're free to go.
Thank you, Your Honor. All right. The Honorable Court of Appeals for the Second District of Texas now stands adjourned. We dismiss. Thank you.